Now we're holding Pehei Amud Bey's third line from the bottom. The Mishnah had told us, now we know the Korban Pesach has to be eaten inside Yerushalayim, and we talked about before it has to be eaten within one particular defined area. The Rambam, in fact, had a Girsa in the Gemara that you have to have Mechitzis around the area where you're eating the Korban Pesach with your group. So we said in the Mishnah, Hachaloinos, the thickness of the windows in the walls of the city of Yerushalayim, or for that matter, windows in the walls of the Azara, the Ovi Achoima, and the thickness of the wall itself, we said are considered like the inside. The gates themselves, we said, you go only until the Agaf is considered the inside. The Agaf being the place that the door strikes against. We said in the Gemara that the Agaf itself depends when it comes to the gates of the Azara, the Agaf counts like part of the inside with most of the gates except Shaar Nikanor. And when it comes to the gates of Yerushalayim, we said it's considered like the outside because we wanted the space of the gate itself to be available for Metzoroyim to stand in bad weather. But the thickness of the windows and the thickness of the walls, we said, is considered like the inside. So let's say a person is sitting, eating his Korban Pesach with his group. They happen to be sitting next to the wall, and he allows a piece of the Korban Pesach to stick into the thickness of the wall, into the thickness of the window. Then it'll still be kosher because it's still considered inside the city. This is where we're holding. Pehei Amud Bey's three lines from the bottom. Good morning, Yehuda, and welcome. Mishnah says, "Hachalonis for Ovi Achoyma b'chola." The windows and the thickness of the wall are considered like the inside. So, Omer Rav Gagin va'Alias lo niskadshu. So, Rav starts out with a statement, which then we're going to have to test against our Mishnah that says the roofs and the second floors do not have kedusha, meaning. So you have the roofs of Yerushalayim. Now you're allowed to eat Kodshim Kalim anywhere in Yerushalayim, but Rav is telling us not on the roofs. And also in the Azara itself, you have in the Azara of the Beis Mikdash, you have various rooms and lashachos and buildings and whatnot. So the roofs or the second floors of those are not considered to have the kedusha of the Azara that you should be able to eat Kodshim there. So the question is, any, and then you have some of the Rishonim understand Rav to be talking specifically about the roofs of the Azara, but to be saying that Rav, they would say that Rav says you could eat the Kodshim Kalim on the roofs in Yerushalayim, but then we have to figure out how that fits with the next piece of Gemara over here. Anyway, the Gemara says, any, is that so? The same Rav tells us in the name of Rav Chia, Kizesa Pescha, they had large groups of people usually registered for each Korban Pesach, so much so that each person would just get a kizayis of meat. V'halela poka igra, and then when they said Hallel, it was so loud, the saying of Hallel, it was as if the roofs are breaking. Now we're going to learn later on in the Masechta that you have to say Hallel while you're eating the Korban Pesach. So we say Hallel after we eat the Afikomen, but here also they're saying Hallel after they eat the Korban Pesach, but the Gemara is still assuming that the Korban Pesach and the Hallel are taking place in the same place. Now, if you're saying the roofs felt like they're going to split open because the Hallel was so loud, my lab, the achli b'igra, the amri b'igra. L'chorah, that means they would eat the Korban Pesach on the roof, and then they would continue with the Seder and say Hallel over there also. So you see that you're allowed to eat them on the roofs. The answer is loy, not necessarily. It could be the achli b'ara, the amri b'igra. Maybe they ate the Korban Pesach inside on the ground, and then they went up to the roof to say Hallel. Which Marsha says a practical reason for that might have been, if they had such large groups for the Korban Pesach, it must have been very crowded. So when it came to saying Hallel, they want to be able to say it b'simcha, so therefore they would go upstairs to the roof, and there they have more room to spread out, and they would say it over there. There are, by the way, deeper ideas that are brought on this idea that the roofs would break that everyone's talked about, an idea of it, a building in general. You know, we talk about there's pnimi and then there's makif, and you have two different kinds of makif, the kind represented by clothing that fits your body and the kind that's represented by a house, which is more surrounding you from the outside. And so we're saying over here that the Hallel had such an effect even on the Makif HaRochek, even on the house that it felt like the house is going to split open and be able to bring down a tremendous greater Gilui Elikos. Anyway, the point is that if we say that they said that if we say that they said that they only said the Korban Pesach that they only said Hallel on the roof that they ate the Korban Pesach downstairs, then it wouldn't be a contradiction on Rav. So the Gemara says, how could you do that? Eini, is that so? The last Mishnah of our Masechta says you're not allowed to finish off after the Pesach with Afikoman. Now we're going to talk about in the Gemara a number of, when we get to that, a number of meanings of what that means. But one meaning of Afikoman means Afiku Mon, take out your Kalim. So v'omer Rav shol yakru mechavura lechavura. So Rav says it means you're not allowed to say, come, let's take our coats and whatever out of here, and we're gonna go eat and continue to seder with a different group. So you see, therefore, you're not allowed to move from one place to another. So what are you telling me that you're allowed to eat the Korban Pesach downstairs and then be saying Hallel upstairs? L'chora, based on that, not. So that would mean, therefore, it had to mean they ate the Korban Pesach on the roof as well, and that would show, not like Rav says, that the roofs don't have kedusha. So the answer is, loikasha kan b'shas achila, kan b'sholoi b'shas achila. There's a difference between while you're eating versus when you're not eating. The halal takes place after you finished eating. So therefore, after you finished eating, if you want to say halal someplace else, then yes, you're able to do that. But when it comes to while you're doing the meal itself, then you have what Rav is saying, that you're not allowed to move from one chavura to the next, because ein maftirin achra pesach after koyman. So no contradiction. With that said, by the way, the Minchas Chinuch has a long discussion of this and says that maybe this Gemara, now you have other Gemaras on the subject of eating things on the roof, in particular a Gemara in Zvachim that he refers to that seems to imply that there's no issue with it. In fact, the Rambam doesn't bring this issue either. So it may be, he says that our Gemara is not the last word on the subject. There are other Gemaras that say that you could actually eat it on the roof. But in terms of our Gemara over here, we're saying that you can't. Okay. Toshma, Abba Shol Omer, let's bring a proof from Abba Shol, says, Aliyas Beis Kodesh HaKadoshim, Chamurim Beis Kodesh HaKadoshim, the attic of the Kodesh Kadoshim. Now the Beis Mikdash was built in such a way, you had a ground floor, and then you had above it, you had a second floor. So that second floor above the Kodesh HaKadoshim, Chamurim Beis Kodesh HaKadoshim, that's even more stringent. The rules for it, when you're allowed and not allowed to go into it, is even more stringent than the Kodesh HaKadoshim itself. She base Kodesh HaKadoshim Kohen Gadol nichnas lepam achas bashana. The Kodesh HaKadoshim of Kohen Gadol is allowed to go in it once a year, as we know, on Yom Kippur. Actually, he goes in there four times a year on Yom Kippur, but the point is he goes in only one day a year. The attic over the Kodesh HaKadoshim, they would only go into it once every 7 years, once every Shemitah cycle. Others say it was a little more often, it was twice every Shemitah cycle. Others say they would only go in there once every Yovel. And the point was, the only reason to go in there was Leda Mahit Tzricha, to find out what it needs. In other words, because the wall might be developing cracks and you might need to fix it. So the point is that you see, therefore, that the second floors have kedusha, and therefore you're not just allowed to go in it stam. You're only allowed to go in it for this purpose of checking when it needs to be fixed. Marsha says, by the way, an idea of it, the Shechina, so to speak, came milamayla lamata, came from Shemayim down onto earth and rests in the Kodesh HaKadoshim. Therefore, in a certain sense, the attic where the Shechina passed through first on its way down into the Kodesh HaKadoshim has greater kedusha than the Kodesh HaKadoshim itself. Anyway, the point is, again, you see that the second floor has kedusha. So what are you telling me that it doesn't as far as Kodeshim and Kodeshim Kalim? So Omer of Yosef Mehechol the native Inish. So Rabbi Yosef says, what are you trying to bring a proof? You're trying to argue based on the Heichel. The Heichel is a special case. Shiny Heichel. The Heichel is different than other buildings in anywhere in the Beis Hamikdash, or even than any other buildings in the Beis Hamikdash complex, let alone than any buildings anywhere else in Yerushalayim. Dichtiv, because you have a pasuk in Divrei Yomim. that mentions about the blueprint of the Beis Hamikdash. Vayitin David leShlomo bnei es tavnis haUlam. David gave to his son Shlomo the blueprint of the Ulam, the entryway in front of the Heichal, the es botov and its various rooms, the es ganzakov, or the pasuk actually says viganzakov, and its storage areas, the aliyosav and its second floors, the chadarav apnimim and its inner chambers, uveis haKaporis and the place of the Kaporis, meaning in the Kodesh HaKadoshim. So we see, in other words, that the blueprint included the details of all those things, including the Pasuk mentions Ali Yosef, the upper floors. Ochtiv, and a few psukim later it says, Akol b'chsav miyad Hashem olayhi. Yil David tells Shlomo, all of this is in writing from the hand of Hashem who gave it to me to understand. So in other words, we see that the blueprint of the Heichal is something special. Since it mentions Ali Yosef, then everything that's mentioned in that pasuk has a special degree of Kedusha. Therefore, we can say that, yes, that's an exception to the general rule that second floors and higher don't have as much Kedusha. You can't necessarily prove from that about other buildings in Yerushalayim or other buildings in the Azara that those should have that level of kedusha. By the way, an interesting thing that comes of this, that we're saying that the upper floors above the Heichal had a degree of kedusha, some of them even higher than the Heichal, there's an interesting point that Rishonim bring on that and is brought in Shulchan Aruch. Therefore, the upper floor above a shul also you have to be careful with to not just use it for mundane purposes. So the post can talk about the details, what exactly would and what exactly you would and wouldn't be allowed to do up there. In fact, the Taz actually mentions a horrifying thing. He says that when he was young, he says, I lived in a room above the shul and above the big shul in Krakow with my family. And at one point, a couple of his young children passed away, Rahman al-Islam, and he said, I attribute it to that we're living upstairs of a shul. With that said, now how do you have nowadays? You have shuls in many buildings where you have people living upstairs. Even this shul itself has people living upstairs. One thing the post can say is if the place was built to begin with as something else and then turned into a shul, then you have more of a heter. Which is true of many shuls in Crown Heights and in other places in the world. The building wasn't originally designated as a shul. You had a room upstairs there. You had apartments upstairs there, and later on they turned a downstairs apartment into a shul. Even then, it does say that maybe at least you shouldn't be doing a tashmish shognai upstairs. It shouldn't be, for example, that the upstairs floor has, for example, of a dezara, or that you have a bathroom in directly above the Aron Kodesh or something. Yeah. Anyway, the point is, so we asked, based on the second floor of the Kodesh HaKadoshim, that we see it has Kedusha, and we're saying the Heichal is different because the blueprint of it is exactly given Min HaShemayim, and the Pasuk mentions the second floors as well. Tashma, so let's try to bring another proof. A Braisa says, actually it's a Mishnah in Masechta Maaseh Sheni, HaLashochas HaBnuyas BaKodesh UPsuchas LaChol, chambers in the Azara that are built in the holy area and they're open to the non-holy area. So in other words, let's say, for example, you have a room that's built inside the Azara. The actual floor space of it is inside the rectangle of the Azara, but it only has one door, and that door faces outwards towards the Chel, or towards the Har HaBayis. So then the din is, Toichan Chol v'Gagaseihan Kodesh. The inside of such a room is considered Chol, is considered the lesser level of Kedusha. So, for example, let's say in this example, Tmeim would be allowed to go in there because it's not considered part of the Azara. V'Gagaseihan Kodesh, but the roof of it is considered Kodesh. Now that shows that the roofs are Kodesh. The answer is Tirgum of Chista b'shagaseihen shoven l'karka azara. Rav Chista says, yeah, but that Mishnah is talking about where we have a room that's built underground of the azara, and therefore the roof of it is exactly flush with the floor of the azara. Now we know that as you went up the Har HaBayis, as you went towards the Heichal, the ground got higher and higher, and for that reason they had the Har HaBayis. Therefore, the Har HaBayis and the Azaras were terraced. Basically, you had the Har HaBayis, then you would have to go up some steps to get from that to the Ezras Noshim, and then you'd go up 15 steps from that to get from that to the Ezras Yisrael, and then a couple steps to get from that to the Ezra's Koinim and so forth. It gets higher and higher as you go along. So you could have rooms. You could have rooms then that are built under the Azara, but where the roof of them is flush with the floor of the Azara. But when you go outside the Azara, when you go out to the Chel or to the Harabayas, you're on a lower level, and therefore there's room enough for the door for the room to have a door that will open out onto there. And you actually have an example of that. You have, for example, the Mishnah mentions in Midas, you have the 15 steps, the 15 shiramalas between Ezra's Yisrael and Ezra's Noshim, the 15 semicircular steps over there. In the wall, next to them, on each side of them, you had a little room where, again, the point is that Ezra's Yisrael is 7.5 amas taller, is 7.5 amas higher than the floor of the Ezra's Noshim, and in that space over there, they had rooms built where the Levium would store their musical instruments. So there's an actual example. So, for example, those rooms, the roof of those rooms would have the din of the Kodesh HaKadosh, would have the din of the Ezra's Yisrael. So Tmeim can't walk onto that part of the floor, for example. But to go into those rooms, let's say, for example, a Mechusa Kippurim, who's allowed to go into the Ezra's Nashim, would be allowed to go into those rooms. He's going underneath the Ezra's Yisrael. Doesn't matter, because the room is open only into Ezra's Nashim. Okay, so the Gemara says, Ihachi, if that's how you're going to understand it, Ema Seifa, then look at the next part of the Mishnah. It continues, Bnuyas Bachol Psuchas Lakodesh, if you have the other way around, rooms that are built in the less holy area and open into the holy area. So the other way around, let's say you had a room built into the Chel or into the Harabayas, and the entrance of it is in the Azara. So then, Teuchen Kodesh for Gagasehen Choyl. Then the other way around, the inside of such a room would be Kodesh, the roof of it would be Choyl. By the way, there's a Braisa on that Mishnah in Maisa Sheni that says they wouldn't, Afapishen Mekayimin, it says they wouldn't keep such buildings as a long term thing. If they had such a thing, it would be built for temporary purposes. As a permanent thing, they didn't have such things, buildings that are built in Choyl and open into Kodesh. Anyway. So we're saying the inside of them is Kodesh. For example, Tmeim are not allowed to go in there, and the roofs of them are Chol. Now, if you're talking about the pashtus, both cases in the Mishnah have to be the same thing. You're talking about the roof is flush with the floor. Well, if you're talking about where the roof is flush with the floor of the Azara, havile mechilas, then what it means is it amounts to you're talking about tunnels. But Amar Rav Yechon and mechilas lo niskadshu. Now, we learned previously on Daf Samach Zayin that Rabbi Yochanan had said that tunnels under the Harabayis, under any of the Beis Mikdash complex, do not have kedusha. So what do you mean? So if you were to say that the roofs always have kedusha, whether they're flush with the ground or not, then very simple. We say we're talking about a building that's built outside the Azara. Where the floor of it is the same level as the floor of the Azara. The entrance of it is into the Azara. The actual footprint of the building itself is outside the rectangle of the Azara. And we're saying that the inside of that is considered Kodesh. And you would say the roof of it is considered, you would say that the roof of it is considered Chol. And then in the first part of the Mishnah, you'd say that the other way around, the roof is considered Kodesh because it's inside the rectangle of the Azara. But if you're telling me the roofs never have, if you're telling me the only time the roofs have Kedusha means when they're flush with the ground, well, then it comes out. Second part of the Mishnah, therefore, you're describing something that's a tunnel under the Azara. So if it's a tunnel, then it doesn't have Kedusha based on Rabbi Yochanan's rule. No, that's the point. In other words, that a room is, we're calling it a room, but if practically speaking, if the ceiling of it is flush with the floor of the Azara, and it opens out, and it opens into the Azara, then it means it's a tunnel under the Azara. So actually, we're saying, therefore, that in that case, the roof, so we're saying the roof would be Chol because the actual footprint of the building is outside the rectangle of the Azara. So therefore, the roof of it is Chol. But we're saying the inside is Kodesh, but it opens into the Azara. But again, in order to be parallel with the first part of the Mishnah, we have to be talking about where the roof is flush with the floor of the Azara. So you're talking about a room below the level of the Azara. The roof of it is a continuation of the Azara, of the floor of the Azara. The actual inside of the room itself is below the ground level of the Azara, and then it has an opening, it has an entrance. You have to walk upstairs, let's say, to get from it into the Azara. That amounts to a tunnel. Well, that's what we're saying. In that case, the inside is Kodesh and the roof is Chol. But the question, because it's outside the, because it's outside the rectangle of the Azara. But the question is, why would it have any Kedusha at all, according to Rabbi Yochanan's rule, that Mechilas, Lo Niskadshu, that the tunnels don't have Kedusha? The answer is Rabbi Yochanan's rule is talking about tunnels that open out to the Harabais. Meaning, we talked about previously, and Daf Samach Zayin, Samach Ches, we have the rules of which kinds of Tmeim have to leave which Machnos, Machna Yisrael, Machna Levia, Machna Shechina. So when you have a Baal Keri, we said over there, a Baal Keri has to be sent out of two Machnas. He's not allowed to be in Machna Yisrael, in Machna Shechina, which is the Azara, or in Machna Levia, the rest of the Harabayas. So he's not allowed to be in the Harabais, but he'd be allowed to be in tunnels under the Harabais, where those tunnels open up into the Harabais. Not necessarily is he talking about ones where the opening is to the Azara. So the vort is, in other words, you have a room over here where the inside of the room is below the floor level of the Azara. So it's like a tunnel relative to the Azara. But, so Rabbi Yochanan told us, Mechilas Leniskadshu, we thought that applies across the board. Now we're saying that no. If it opens to the Harabais, then we're saying it doesn't have the Kedusha of Machna Levia of the Harabais. But if it opens up into the Azara, into Machna Shechina, then it may well have the Kedusha of the Azara, which is what the Mishnah is telling us. So Kitanya Ahib, Psuchas Lazara. So Rabbi Yochanan is talking about ones that are open to the Harabais, and the Mishnah there is talking about ones that are open into the Azara. Those can have the Kedusha of the Azara, even though they're underground relative to the Azara. So the Gemara says, V'hotanya, Rabbi Yehuda, Omer Mechilas Mitachas Ahecho Choyl. What do you mean, though? You have a Braisa where Rabbi Yehuda says that tunnels that are under the Heichel are considered Chol. Now, the Heichel obviously is in the middle of the Azara, so it's inside the Azara. So a tunnel underneath it, the Pashtus, is going to open into the Azara, and we still say that it's considered Chol, the inside of it. The answer is Kitanya Hishep Suchis L'Chol. The answer is you could be talking about where the tunnel starts under the Heichel, but then it continues out into the Harabais, outside of the Azara. Namely, Rashi points out, you have only 11 Amos between the back wall of the Heichel, the back wall of the Kodesh HaKadoshim, and the wall of the Azara. So you could conceivably have a tunnel that starts under the Heichel, starts maybe even under the Kodesh HaKadoshim or something, and then it extends outward, extends through those 11 Amos, and continues out to the Harabais. So we're saying there, where the opening of it is to the Harabais, then according to Rabbi Yochanan's rule, it doesn't have the Kedusha of the Harabais. But if, in fact, it was a shorter tunnel, and the opening of it ended up inside the Azara, then yes, it would have the Kedusha of the Azara. Okay. So no proof from that Mishnah one way or the other about Rav's rule about the roofs not having Kedusha. What about Toshma, the Gagoy Kodesh? What about, let's continue, we said in that same rule, a different rule. The roof of the Heichel has Kedusha. This is a continuation of Rabbi Yehuda's statement. Now, it's true, we said before, that the blueprint of the Heichel is given min Hashemayim, but the Pasuk lists over there a bunch of components of the building. It doesn't say anything about the roof. Therefore, the roof, Papashtus, we can't say that the Heichel is a special case, like Rabbi Yosef said before. The roof of it would have to be the same rule as other roofs elsewhere in the Azara. And Rabbi Yehuda continues, V'gagad Kodesh, that the roof of the Heichel is Kodesh. So you see that roofs have Kedusha. So the Gemara says, V'tisvara, is that what you're thinking? That it literally means that the roof has Kedusha for all purposes, in other words, that it has the Kedusha of the Azara, V'hakatani. But the Mishnah there continues, Gagin Halolo, actually it's Braisa, Gagin Halolo Ein Oichlin Sham Kodshe Kodshim, these roofs that you have in the Azara, above the various buildings in the Azara, Ein Oichlin Sham Kodshe Kodshim, you can't eat Kodshe Kodshim over there, those have to be eaten in the Azara, you're not allowed to eat them there because the roofs are not considered part of the Azara, even though they're within the rectangle of the Azara, but because they're roofs, because they're above ground, then therefore they're not considered to have the level of Kedusha of the Azara. That is what we're asking. The ein shechtin shem kodshim kalim. You also can't shecht kodshim kalim over there. Kodshim kalim can be shechted anywhere in the Azara, but only in a place that's actually considered the Azara. So again, you have, let's say, inside the Azara, you have the rectangle of the Azara, 187 by 135 amos, but you have different buildings built inside it. So we're saying you can't take the animal to the top of one of those buildings and shecht it over there. So therefore, that fits with what Rav is saying, that Gagin Bali is Plenis Gadru. But in that case, then you yourself, you Makshin, who are asking from the fact that Rabbi Yehuda says that the roof of the Heichel is Kodesh, you have to figure out yourself, Kodesh in what sense? We're saying that you can't shecht Kodshim Kalam or eat Kodshim over there. The El Akasha Gaga Kodesh, so then you have to understand what do we mean the roof of the Heichel is Kodesh. So the answer is, Rav Chama Bar Guya says, it's only Kodesh in the sense that you can use it to place clay shoris, that you can use it to place kalim that have kedusha over there. As we have an example, we're going to bring where we use certain measuring sticks that were needed for the Beis Mikdash that were kept in an upper floor. In other words, Tosfos says it's not that you have. First of all, it's not that they're being placed on top of the heichal. We're going to say in a second they're being placed in a different room in the Beis Mikdash. We're also not saying that you have to keep clay kodesh in a place of kedusha, but practically speaking, they would try to keep kalim of kodesh in a place of kedusha. So therefore, that's what we mean. The Heichel has that, the roof of the Heichel has that degree of Kedusha only, that it's considered a holy place. It's an appropriate place to put Kalim, but not that it has the Din of the Azara as far as Shechting or eating Korbanos. By the way, the Rebbe once talked about the idea, you know, back, we all remember back in Nun Aleph at the time of the first Gulf War, the Rebbe was shturming about the famous Medrash about Melech Poras fighting against Melech Arvi, and then Mashiach standing Al Gag Beis HaMikdash and announcing Higiyaz Man Geulaschem. So the Rebbe Shteldzachan, we see from our Gemara, the Gag Beis HaMikdash actually doesn't have such a degree of Kedusha. And yet we're saying that's Dafka, where he stands, implying, in other words, that he's taking even the places that have less Kedusha and bringing them into Kedusha. So Amar of Chama Bar Guya Lo'osen Beis Amos. For example, you have the two Amma measuring sticks that were kept in the Beis Hamikdash. So the roof of the Heichel would be an appropriate place to keep those, but not that it had any kedusha as far as korbanos. Ditznan, we learn in a Mishnah in Kalim. Beis Amos Hoya B'Shushan Abira. There were two Amma measuring sticks in Shushan Abira. Shushan Abira is like this. You had the eastern gate of the Har HaBayis that leads out to Nachal Kidron, east of Yerushalayim. That gate had an image of Shushan on it. And the Gemara explains that, The Gemara explains in Menachos, Rashi brings over here one of the reasons that it says over there that the Persian kings who gave permission to build the second Beis Hamikdash, the Jewish people should always remember where they came from. They should remember that they came from Persia and the Persian kings allowed them to build the Beis Hamikdash, and therefore they should be grateful. The other reason the Gemara says is they shouldn't rebel against them. Rabbi Hanan over here puts it a little bit differently. You know, that they should remember where they came from. Remember that because of Averis in the time of the first Beis Mikdash, the Beis Mikdash was destroyed and you went into Golos, and then the Eibishter took you out of there and brought you to this and built the second Beis Mikdash. So be careful to listen to the Eibishter from now on. Anyway, so there was the Shar Shushan. Above it there was a room which was called Shushan Abira. And in it, they had these two measuring sticks. Achas al-Keren Mizrachis Tzfonis v'Achas al-Keren Mizrachis Drimis. One was in the northeastern corner, one was in the southeastern corner. Zush al-Keren Mizrachis Tzfonis Hoisi Yisera al-Shal Moshe Chatzi Etzba. The one in the northeast corner was a half an etzba longer than the Amma of Moshe. In other words, you have the Amma of Moshe as the standard Amma that we use for many purposes in Halacha. This one was a half an etzba longer than that. To put it in modern terms, according to Rabbi Avraham Chaim Nuh, an amma is a little less than 19 inches. So it means, according to him, an etzba is about 3/4 inch. So therefore, this measuring stick was 3/8 inch longer than a standard amma. The one in the southeast corner, was another half etzba longer than that. Nimtzi Yisera al-Shal Moshe etzba, meaning that it was a full etzba longer than Moshe's. The lama hoyu achas gdoila v'achas k'tana. Why did they have a short one and a long one? Just use the one of Moshe and have done with it. The reason is shiur umnin notlin b'k'tana umachzirin b'gdoila. when craftsmen, the Beis Mikdash would contract with craftsmen to do work for them, they would contract with them using a regular size amma. And then they were expected to deliver the finished product using one of these two larger ones. So, for example, let's say you had a new building needed to be built someplace in the Azara, let's say. So they would contract with the workers. They would say, we need a building 10 amas long, measured in Moshe amas, standard amas. When they deliver the building, it has to be 10 of one of these larger amas. Well, we're going to say in a second why. And the reason was, Kadesh Shalo Yavayu, B'day Me'ilah, in order that they don't accidentally come to do Me'ilah. Because otherwise, what happens, we're contracting with them to build a building, let's say, 10 amas long. That means we're giving them material for a building that's that size. If we don't have them give a little bit extra, then they might mistakenly end up using some of the stones or some of the material that was meant to be used for building Hekdesh, and then they're going to come to do Me'ilah. So, you know, the point is, we're not talking about the spot, we're talking about the material that they used. They built, they're using wood, they're using stones, they're using mortar, whatever it is. If they deliver an exactly 10 amma long building, they may end up, so they were given enough stones, let's say, for 10 amas. Now they might mistakenly end up, it's a tiny bit smaller, and then they're going to come to Me'ilah. So instead, we make it a little bit larger. No, but even if they don't take it home, still, they might end up, they have extra, and they might end up using it. Okay. So the question is, Batauti Lomali. Okay, so that explains why they needed a larger amma. But why do they need two different ones, one a half etzba larger and one a whole etzba larger? The reason is, Achas l'kaspa v'dava, v'achas l'vinyana. One was for gold and silver work, the other was for building work. With the gold and silver also, in other words, they're contracting with the workers, let's say, We need a new golden keli, let's say, that's going to be so and so large. That's going to be a foot, that's going to be an amma across, let's say. So they have to deliver a slightly larger one for the same reason, so they don't end up taking some of the gold and being over on Me'ilah, but we don't make them a full etzba larger, because after all, gold is expensive stuff, so they only have to make it a half etzba larger. On the other hand, when it comes to building work, then they need to do a full etzba larger, a full etzba per amma. Anyway, the point is that we see that those measuring sticks were kept in this upper floor above Shar Shushan. So in the same way, the roof of the Heichal can be considered a place that's valid for putting Kalim of Kodesh, but not that it has any Kedusha as far as Shechting or eating Kodeshim over there, which goes with what Rav said, Dagin Vali is going to statue. That's what we're saying. So we're saying the roof. That's the thing. When we said the Gaga Kodesh, when Rabbi Yehuda said the Gaga Kodesh, we said it doesn't mean Kodesh as far as Kodeshim. It means Kodesh as far as it's an appropriate place to store Kalim of Kodesh. Okay, the Gemara says Tnan. Let's look at our Mishnah now. The Mishnah had said Chalonis, the thickness of the wall of the windows in the walls of Yerushalayim or the walls of the Azara, the Ovi Achoyma and the thickness of the wall on top. Kilifnim, those are considered like the inside. So, b'shlema achalonis mashkachasla. Now, let's consider. If we're saying, according to Rav's rule, that gagin are considered to have kedusha only when they're flush with the floor of the azara, then, when it comes to windows, I can understand how the bottom of a window can be flush with the floor of the azara, because you can have mashkachasla d'shavya l'karka azara. You can have, again, the floor is, the level is getting higher and higher as you go further and further up the Hanabayas towards the Heichal. So you could have, let's say, you have a window in the wall over there where, relative to the Ezras Yisrael, for example, it's a couple of amas off the floor, and relative to the Ezras Kohanim, it's flush with the floor, because the Ezras Yisrael was 2.5 amas lower than the Ezras Kohanim. You have to go up steps to reach the Ezras Kohanim. So you could have, the wall next to the Ezras Yisrael then has a window in it, 2.5 amas off the ground. Then, as you go further, and then as you go further towards the Ezras Kohanim, you find that the bottom of that window is flush with the floor of the Azara. So therefore, so that we could say is considered like the inside. So in other words, therefore, the thickness of that window, the thickness of that window inside the wall would be considered like part of the Ezra's Tainin. So fine, I can understand. So that works even according to Rav's rule. Ela oivi achoyma heichim ashkachasla. But how do you have the thickness of the wall? How does that fit with Rav's wall? You're saying the top of the wall has Kedusha. Now, the top of the wall is like Gagin Elias. According to Rav's rule, that shouldn't work unless it's flush with the floor of the Azara. How would you have? The walls are much taller than that. The walls are not only flush with the floor. The answer is Mashkachas LeBavar Shura. You can find it when it comes to the Bar Shura, which is a small wall next to the large wall. So in other words, you had, there's the Azara, there's the floor of the Azara, then around the Azara you have a wall, but between the large wall, the tall wall, which is many, many amas tall, and the Azara, you have a low wall over there, where the purpose of that low wall is in order to strengthen the ground, so it's less likely, so dirt doesn't collect over there and eventually weaken the wall. So yeah, but it was a standard thing when they built cities, and then the Beis Mikdash was almost like a small city in itself, that they would have like that, a large wall and a small wall. As we find in Megillas Eicha, where it says the chel and the wall were both in mourning. It means the large wall and the small wall next to it. So therefore, the small wall next to it could indeed be flush with the floor of the Azara. So it's again relative to the area outside the Azara. It's a couple of amas tall because the area outside the Azara, the chel, the Harabayas, is a few amas lower than the Ezra Yisrael and the Ezra Kohanim. So you have room for a wall over there, but it's a short wall, and the top of it comes out flush with the floor of the Azara. Now again, the Rambam brings this whole thing of Gagin Valias Feniskadshu. He doesn't make this distinction about flush with the floor of the Azara and not flush and whatever. So the Minchas Chinuch has a long discussion of it that says, again, there are other Gemaras that relate to this subject. The Rambam may hold that after all, even though our Gemara is talking about over here distinctions, whether they're flush with the floor or not, the Rambam may not hold, at least as far as the Azara, that such distinctions are valid. Ultimately, any Gagin or Alias over the Azara would not have Kedusha. As we're saying in the Gemara over here, but other roofs in Yerushalayim might have a certain degree of kedusha as you have other Gemaras on it. For example, you have a Gemara in Makkos that talks about this in Marsha over there, which seems to imply that at least as far as Yerushalayim, we say the roofs do have kedusha, which would mean in terms of our Gemara over here, you might actually be able to eat the Korban Pesach on the roof. No, because the fact is, we're still saying it has to have a place. Well, that's the thing. If we say that you have to eat the Korban Pesach in a place that has the Kedusha of Yerushalayim, if we take the view, according to the straightforward meaning of our Gemara over here, that the roofs of Yerushalayim don't have the Kedusha of the city, then you can't eat there, whether you'd like it or not. The most you can do is say Halal over there. But if you take the view, as you have, In that Gemara in Makkos, for example, talks about a case of a tree growing inside your Yerushalayim and the din about eating Ma'is Sheni on top of the tree. So you have a Tosfos and you have a Marsha over there that seems to imply that in fact, when it comes to the roofs of your Yerushalayim, it's not like it's saying in our Gemara over here, you would in fact be able to eat Kodshim, you would in fact be able to eat Kodshim Kalim, including the Korban Pesach, and Ma'is Sheni on top of those trees, and in this case, on top of these roofs. Okay. Like I said, the Minchas Chinuch has a long discussion of it in a couple of places. Okay. Mishnah says, Shtei chavuras shoyu oichlin mebayis echad. Suppose you have two groups who are eating a Korban Pesach in one house. Now, Rashi explains, we're talking about they're eating one Korban Pesach, they split up into two groups. Now, we're going to see in the Gemara, we have a machlokes. Is it that you have to eat the Korban? Is it that each Korban Pesach has to be eaten by one group? They can't split up, but one person could go from one group to another and eat in two different places. Or is it the other way around? A person can't go to two different groups, but the Pesach itself can be split up among two different groups. If you have, let's say, so they all joined together. They all registered for one Korban Pesach. And now we have, let's say, 100 people, and they decide, you know what, we don't have room around our table for 100 people, so we're going to have 50 in this room and 50 in the next room. According to that, they would be allowed to do that. Our Mishnah is taking that view, according to Rashi. No, as long as you can have as many as you want, as long as you have a kazayis of meat for each one. Yeah. So if you have the two of them are eating in one room, Elo Hoichim as Pnam the Elach for Oichlin, Halach for Oichlin, the Elo Hoichim as Pnam, Halach for Oichlin, each group can turn in a different direction and eat. Meaning, even though Rashi is saying they're eating from one carbon Pesach, we don't require them to be facing each other so that it should look at least like one big group. No, they're allowed to be facing in different directions, looking like they're separate groups, because it doesn't matter. The Tana of our Mishnah holds that you're allowed to have the Korban Pesach split up between multiple groups. The Rambam actually learns that what it means is they have to. The Rambam learns we're talking about two different Korbanos Pesach, and they have to face in different directions. It's not saying they could, like Rashi is saying they have to, because this way it has to, it's in order to demonstrate that they are in fact two separate groups eating two separate Korbanos Pesach. Now, what you have is the samovar is in the middle. Now, Rashi again explains this means it's optional. You can have the samovar, which they use to in those times they mix their wine with water, as they know, and often they would use hot water for that purpose. Yeah. So therefore, you have the samovar with the hot water in the middle. So it's a convenient place to have it. This way, the waiter who's serving them can easily get from it for both tables. So again, Rashi says, the point is this is also saying it's optional. Even though it's a hefsek between the two groups, it doesn't matter. There are Rishonim, we'll learn, Rabbeinu David, who says, for example, following the Rambam's idea that we're saying they have to turn in different directions, that it means they should dafka put the samovar in the middle as a hefsek. Okay, Shashamash Oimid Limzog, when the waiter gets up to serve, now the waiter himself is a Yid, and he belongs to one or the other of these groups, so Kofetz as Piv, he has to close his mouth, Umachzer as Ponav, and turn his face in the direction of the group that he's in to begin with, Ad Shemagdia Etzochav Rosse, until he reaches his group, V'Oichel, and then he can eat. The point is, Rashi says, you don't want, there should be Chashad, people are going to suspect him of eating his Korban Pesach with the other group, and the Tana of our Mishnah holds, you're not allowed to move from one group to another, so therefore he has to keep his mouth closed and his head turned in order that people are not choshed him that he's eating with that group. Again, the Rambam has a different pirush of it. Almost every line of this Mishnah, you can see Rashi and the Rambam disagree on what it means. The Rambam understands that it means if the waiter gets up while he has a piece of the Korban Pesach in his mouth, then he has to stop chewing it and keep it in his mouth until he's finished serving the other table. Then he can return to his table and continue eating it because he's not allowed to eat it in the other group. Yeah. And then he can eat. A kala, if she's eating together with a group, is allowed to turn her face in a different direction and eat, because she's embarrassed, because people are looking at her. So therefore, she's allowed to turn in a different direction. Again, because we say Pesach Nechal B'Shtei Chaburis, you are allowed to have one Korban Pesach divided up between two groups. So she, in effect, is one group of her own facing in a different direction. It doesn't matter. And Tosfos says, the point is, even let's say she started eating facing in the same direction as everybody else, and then partway through eating the Korban Pesach, she feels embarrassed, she's still allowed to turn around at that point. Well, the Chosin is not as embarrassed. The Kala is the one who tends to be embarrassed, but yeah. Okay. So the Gemara says, Masnisin Mani Rav Yehudahi. Now, who is our Mishnah like that was saying that our Mishnah allows you to take one Korban Pesach and split it up between two groups? Rav Yehudahi. That would be specifically according to Rav Yehuda. The Tanya. The pasuk says, "Al habotim ashed yoichlu oisibahem." That in the first half of the pasuk is talking about the blood that they put on the doorposts and whatever in Mitzrayim. But the point is, the pasuk continues on the houses plural in which they. Eat it in them. Malama cha Pesach nechal b'shtei chaburis. So we see from that Korban Pesach can be eaten in two different groups. Because we're saying you have two houses, botim, you have different groups that are eating, yoichlu, but you have oisoi, it, one Korban Pesach. So you see that one Korban Pesach can be split up among two houses. Now, you would think that that also means that one person could eat in two different places, so you could start in one place and then move to another room and continue. No, Talmud Lema, Bavayis Echad Yechol. No, therefore the pasuk continues. Therefore the pasuk says it has to be eaten in one house. So, Mikan Amru, so based on this, the Chachamim said, Hashamash Sha'ochu Kazayis the Tzadatanur. What if the waiter, so he's in charge of roasting the Korban Pesach. So he's sitting there next to the oven and making sure it gets roasted. Now, what happens right away when Pesach begins? As soon as it's finished roasting, he ate a kezias. Rashi says he forgot and put a kezias of it into his mouth. Now he's registered for this Korban Pesach. He's allowed to eat from it just like anybody else. But you would expect him to wait until it's finished being roasted and brought to the table. Instead, he forgets and takes a piece of it and puts it in his mouth while he's taking care of it. It could be tasting it to see if he's ready. It could be anyway. Rashi just says that he forgot. Anyway, so ipikeyahu. So now, if he's smart. Now, if he moves from there to the table, that's going to be Pesach Nechel B'Shnei Mekoymus. That's going to be that he's eating in two different places, and he can't do that. So if he's smart, then he can fill up on it right there, sitting by the oven, because, again, as long as he's there, then he can continue eating over there. The Imrotzu B'Nei Chavura lasts Imay Tova, if the other members of the group want to do him a favor, so he doesn't have to eat by himself, boy. In the Yoshim Betzidoi, then they'll come and sit next to him, and that way they'll just have that fine. Instead of we were planning to all eat by the table, instead we'll all eat over here near the other. No, they'll bring over their chairs or whatever. I don't know. Divrei Rabbi Yehuda. This is what Rabbi Yehuda says. So in other words, in short, Rabbi Yehuda allows the Korban Pesach to be divided up among two groups, but he says one person can't eat in two different places. Rabbi Shimon says the other way around. When it says ala botim asher yochlo oisei b'hem, it says the houses, plural, in which they eat it, the Korban Pesach in it, is the other way around. Malamachal oichel oichel b'shtei mekoymus. From here we learn that one person could eat in two different places. In other words, he says asher yochlo means each individual person. Yochlo means collectively, the people who are registered for the Korban Pesach. Collectively, each one of them can eat ala botim in different houses. You would think that means that you could divide it up among two groups. No, therefore the pasuk says it has to be eaten in one house. So Rabbi Shimon is saying exactly the opposite of Rabbi Yehuda. So the Gemara says, what is the underlying machlokas? Rabbi Yehuda Sava, Yesh Eim L'Masoidas, Rabbi Shimon Sava, Yesh Eim L'Mikra. You have the word over here is Yei Ochel in the pasuk. But the word Yei Ochel, now we read it like that with those Nekudas, Tzere, Kometz, Tzere. But because it's written in the Torah, Yud Aleph, Chof Lamed, the Torah is written without Nekudas, therefore you could read it as if it said Yoichel. Now Yei Ochel would be it shall be eaten, referring to the Korban Pesach. Yoichel would mean he shall eat, referring to the person. So therefore, Rabbi Yehuda holds Yesh Eim L'Masoidas. The more primary thing is how it was nimsar to us, how the word should be written in the Sefer Torah. Therefore, so we don't pay so much attention to how the word is pronounced. It's pronounced Yeochel. We read it as if the letters in the Sefer Torah can be read Yoichel. So therefore, Yoichal means he shall eat. So it means, in other words, so b'vayis echad Yoichal, he, the person, can only eat in one place. So he can't eat it. He can't take it to a different house and eat it, to a different room and eat it. Rabbi Shimon says, "Yesh em l'mikra." Rabbi Shimon says the primary thing is the mikra, how you actually read the word. The word is read yei ochel, it shall be eaten. So it's referring to the Korban Pesach, not the people. So in other words, the main thing, it has to be eaten in one group. It can't be divided up into two groups. But an individual person can go from one group to another and eat a little here, a little there. Rashi brings an explanation that he heard that it means that that Yesh Eim L'Mikra means that we would go according to what it says in the pasuk, and Yesh Eim L'Masodas would be that we go according to Targum Onkelos. But Targum Onkelos translates B'Chavura Chado Yisachel, it has to be eaten in one group. But Rashi says there's no such thing. Yesh Eim L'Masodas, first of all, Yesh Eim L'Masodas never means Targum Onkelos. Always in Shas, when I talk about Yesh Eim L'Mikra, Yesh Eim L'Masodas, we're talking about how the letters are written in the Chumash versus how they're read versus within the Kurdish. Also, we know Rav Shimon is always the one who holds Yesh Eim L'Mikra, so therefore that wouldn't work. According to this explanation, Rav Shimon would be the one saying Yesh Eim L'Masoidas, that you go according to Targum Onkelos. So Rashi rejects that explanation and says that no, the way we explained it is like we said, Rav Yehuda focuses on the letters of the pasuk, and Rav Shimon focuses on the Nekudas. So that results in these various opinions that Rabbi Yehuda therefore is saying that you could divide up the Korban Pesach between two people, between two groups, but one person, b'vayis echad yoichal, he reads it as if it said that he can eat only in one house, meaning only in one room, whereas Rabbi Shimon says no, b'vayis echad yei ochel, the Korban Pesach can be eaten only in one room and not divided up among two groups. So when our Mishnah said that you can have two groups that are eating one Korban Pesach, and each one can turn in a different direction, that would be like Rabbi Yehuda. Rabbi Shimon would say that not. Because then it comes out that the Korban Pesach has been divided among two groups. Rabbi Shimon wouldn't allow that. On the other hand, so what we said is, when we said in the Mishnah, we have the case of the waiter over there getting up to eat, where we're saying he has to keep his mouth closed. So according to Rabbi Yehuda, the taka wouldn't be a problem with him eating over there because he's allowed to eat b'shtei chaburas. But nevertheless, with nei chashad, we don't want people to suspect him that what if he's eating from the other Korban Pesach, which he's not even registered for, and he's not allowed to eat. Therefore, he has to keep his mouth closed. According to the Rambam, who says that we're talking about if he has Korban Pesach in his mouth, he's not allowed to eat it. There are Mephoshim who explain that when the Gemara is talking about over here, you could say maybe a whole chavura. You can say you can divide up the Korban Pesach among two whole chavuras, but not to say that one individual person, even according to the Yehuda, should be allowed to take his part of the Korban Pesach and go someplace else and eat it. So that would explain why the waiter has to keep his mouth closed. So fine, because then they're all eating together. They're eating it all in one group. That's the point. In other words, he can't eat in one place, according to Rabbi Yehuda. He can't eat some of it by the oven and then come to the table and eat the rest, because then he'd be eating b'shnei mekomos. So the Gemara continues. Hoyu yoshvin v'nifritza mechitza b'neihem. What happens if the people are sitting and eating the Korban Pesach? All of a sudden, they're eating one Korban Pesach, and all of a sudden, the mechitza gets spread out between them. So now they get divided into two groups. So l'divrei ha'oyim Pesach nechal b'shtei chaburis. According to Rabbi Yehuda, that you could divide one Korban Pesach among two chaburis. No problem. Oichlin, they're allowed to continue and eat because okay. So now they have their two groups. Fine, they're still allowed to continue. L'divrei ha'oyim ena Pesach nechal. But according to Reb Shimon, who says that you can't eat the Pesach b'shtei chaburis, he would say it's also they're not allowed to continue eating until this mechitza is removed. So no, they started without a mechitza. That's the point. If they started without a mechitza and now a mechitza was placed in the middle, so now according to Reb Shimon, now they have to stop eating until that mechitza is removed. Otherwise, it amounts to that they're eating b'shtei chaburis. Now, Rashi explains, in other words, it's not considered shnei mekomos because there's no mokum chodesh. You're not seeing any new place that you're not seeing any new aver that you didn't see before. Therefore, it's still considered, you're still in the same place. You just now have two groups. The other way around, hoyu yoshvim nistalka mechitza b'nehen, what happened if you had two groups that were sitting with a mechitza between them? And then the mechitza was taken down. Then it's the other way around. According to Rabbi Yehuda, that says you're allowed to eat in. According to Rabbi Yehuda, who says that you're allowed to eat in. Or according to Rabbi Shimon, rather, who says you're allowed to eat the Korban Pesach in two places. You're allowed to start here and continue there. Oichlin, they're allowed to continue eating. Now it's considered like they're in a new place because now they're seeing aver that they hadn't before. Before they were marked around with a mechitza. Now that mechitza is removed and they're seeing a whole new part of the room that they didn't see before. That's considered like in a different place. So Rav Shimon would allow it. According to Rav Yehuda, who says you can't eat the Korban Pesach in two different places, then you can't, then he says you can divide up the Korban Pesach among two chaburis. No, so that's in the Mishnah, again, with the waiter, so that's the vote. With the waiter, he would be eating in two different places, not just a matter of chashad. Sorry, I said it wrong. The waiter, when he gets up from one group to go serve the other group, if he continues eating, he's going to be eating the Korban Pesach in two different places, and he can't do that, according to Rav Yehuda. You can have the Korban Pesach can be divided up among two different groups, but he can't eat in two different places. Therefore, he has to keep his mouth closed. So now, in our case over here, when we have a mechitza was removed between them, then now what we have is now, in effect, they're in a different place. So according to Rabbi Yehuda, they have to stop eating until the mechitza is put back up. According to Rabbi Shimon, it wouldn't matter. Rabbi Shimon allows you to eat. According to Rabbi Shimon, you're not allowed to divide it up into two groups, but you're allowed to eat in two different places. So therefore, according to him, it's fine. You're in a new place. You see a new avenue, yeah. So Yosef Rav Kahana kaposhet le'mifshat. So Rav Kahana was sitting and saying these statements about the cases involving the mechitza. He was just saying them flat out, that this is how it is. Making a mechitza makes them into two chavuras. Taking away a mechitza makes them into one big chavura. And it's considered to change the place. Omelet of Ashi, Rav Kahana, so Rav Ashi says to Rav Kahana, why are you taking it as such a given that these are the dinim, the tiboya lachiboya? Really, it should be a question. Siluk mechitza v'asiyas mechitza, mi havi kibayz makomis or chavez chavuris dami is putting up a mechitza or is taking down a mechitza or putting up a mechitza. Is that considered to be like making a new place or like making them into one into two different groups, oiloi or not? And the answer is teiku. Rav Kahana, I guess, accepted what Rav Ashi was saying, or at least Rav Ashi himself, when he wrote the Gemara, said, you're right, it is a kasha, and we leave it as teiku. So therefore, so that I'm right, so if you have in either of those cases, you have a mechitza was put up, or a mechitza is taken down, then you can't eat until things are reestablished as the way before, because we can't be sure whether it's considered like a new chavura or a new place or whatever. Even though you're sitting in the same chair and everything, but you're seeing new Aver or half of your group is hidden from you, etc. Yeah. Okay. The Mishnah had said a kala ifechas is paneh v'chola. We said a kala can turn her face away from the rest of her group and eat, which again, as Tosfos said, even if she ate some of it facing in one direction, she's allowed to turn around and face in another direction. It's not considered like eating b'shnei makomos. Also, Tosfos says another possibility. Maybe the Mishnah is saying she has to turn away. If it's near stick a thing for her to turn away. So my time, because she's embarrassed to eat in front of people because everybody's looking at her. Now, the truth is, by the way, the halacha is, you're not allowed to stare at a kala. She's somebody else's wife. And there's a halacha in Hilchos Sudeh in Shulchan Aruch that says you're not allowed to stare at somebody while they're eating b'chlal. But here we're not even talking about, I mean, they're not looking at her while she's eating, but they're looking at her. They're looking at her jewelry. They're looking at her, sheitel, at her whatever. Yes, they're looking towards her. So therefore she feels embarrassed and therefore she turns away. So the Gemara tells a story in this connection. Rav Huna Breidit of Nassen, Ikla Lebeir of Nachmeitzchah. Rav Huna Breidit of Nassen, who was later on, he became the Reish Galusa. I guess at the time of the story, he wasn't yet the Reish Galusa. Anyway, he one time visited the house of Rav Nachmeitzchah. Omrulay Mashnecha. They asked him, what's your name? Omrulahu Rav Huna. So he doesn't just tell them Huna. He tells them Rav Huna, which they thought was very unusual. Why is he praising himself like that? Omru Nesiv Marapuya, they invited him, Rebbe, please sit down on the couch. Now the point is, important people would sit on the couch to eat or drink. Regular people would sit on a bench. Not on a bench, Rashi says. So he accepted right away. Yosef, he sat down on the couch. Again, Lachora, why? Doesn't it mean like he's acting a little bit gaivadik? Yahavale Kosa, they gave him a cup of wine or something to drink. Kabale Bechadzina, he accepted it right away. He didn't first turn it down, it's okay, I don't need it. And Bashasi Betrezimni, he drank it in two gulps and two swallows. He didn't just drink it down all at once, even though it's only a Revius cup. And Veloy Ahader Ape, and he didn't turn away while he was drinking. He drank right in front of it. So now, this is a bunch of strange things that he's doing. So Omrulay, so they started asking him, my time of Koris Loch Rav Huna, why'd you call yourself Rav Huna, rather than just saying Huna? Omrulahu Baal Hashem Ani. He says to them, because that is my name. So Rashi explains, ever since I was little, they called me Rav Huna. So again, this is Rav Huna Bar Nosson, the Reish Galusa, it's possible that they had a minhag in their family to call them Rav even from when they were little kids. We find actually something similar in the families of the Rabbein, where they called the children, they called the boys Reb whatever, even from Kinvaizon. For example, the Razor, Reb Zalman Aaron. Now, the Rebbe's older brother was known as Razor, Reb Zalman Aaron, even from when he was little. They have similar examples in the families of the other Rabbein. So it could mean that. Marsha brings that what it means is that he had smicha, but they didn't. Rabbeinu Hananel says over here, somoch b'yeshiva ani, that I have smicha, and Marsha explains, in other words, they didn't know who he was, they didn't know he has smicha, and therefore he's entitled to tell them, because you have a halacha. The Gemara mentions elsewhere that when a person is in a place where they don't know him, he's allowed to introduce himself with his title so that they know who he is, and they know to give him the proper cover. Yeah. They say, my time of ki omru lach nesiv apuriya sabta. Why, when we told you to sit on the couch, did you sit over there rather than like the regular people who would sit on the bench? Omalahu. So he answers them because the expression is, anything that the balabais tells you, you do, unless he tells you, go out. Now, what does this chutz mitzeh? You notice it's in parenthesis over here. And in fact, The Me'iri actually says this is something that some joker put into the Gemara over here. It doesn't belong in the Gemara. What do you mean? What do you mean a chutz mitzvah? Somebody put it in as a joke. Marsha also says he found kisliyad of the Gemara that don't have it. With that said, though, there are a lot of Rishonim and Achronim who explain it in various ways. The Magen Avraham brings a couple of explanations on it. One of them he brings from the Bach is, it means, if the Balabas is telling the guest, go do an errand for me, then he's not, go out of the house, do an errand for me, he's not required to do that. Another explanation he brings from a sefer called Mate Moshe is if the host says, you know what, I don't want you as a guest anymore, get out of here, the guest shouldn't be in such a hurry to leave, because it's going to be a gnai for him and for the host. It's going to be like, it's going to become known in the area that the, you know, so the Sfas Emes says that actually this chutz mitzvah was added because of the story of Kamsa bar Kamsa. You had such consequences where the guy was thrown out, therefore the Chachamim added that if the Balabais tells you chutz mitzvah, don't do it. Marsha says a vort, he says, because if he tells you chutz mitzvah, if he tells you tzeh, if he tells you get out of here, he's not your balabais anymore. Therefore, you don't have to listen to him. The whole point is, he's your balabais as long as he's your host, as long as he tells you, you can be here. But if he tells you to go out, he's not your host anymore. Yeah, okay, so. There is a famous vort on it, which it's brought in Reishis Chochma, it's brought in from Inshallah, it's brought in a bunch of other Sfarim, that there's also a remez in it, the balabais being the Eibishter. Now, we know the famous story about Acher, where he had been a Talmud Chacham, then he went off the Derech and did terrible Averis, and a Basko came out from Shemayim and said, Shuvu Bonim Shoivavim, Chutz Me Acher, anybody do Tshuva except for Acher, and Acher heard that and figured in that case, forget about it, I'm a goner, I may as well not even bother, and the mayor is trying his whole life to get him to do Tshuva, Acher was a Rebbe. Or Gemara is hinting at that. If the Balabais, if the Eibishter is telling you, say, get out of here, I don't want your Tshuva, don't listen to him. So you still dochak benichnas, still work on pushing your way back in to do tshuva. The Eibishter is saying he doesn't want it. Doesn't matter. You still, your job is still to try to do tshuva, as Acher should have done. In the end, the Gemara says over there that before he passed away, he cried, and Rameir said apparently he passed away with a hero tshuva. But he never actually be a dime went and did tshuva, and then. Anyway. So therefore he tells them, so when you told me to sit on the couch, I have to sit on there right away. Then they asked him, my time aki yahavi loch kosa kablos b'chadzim, no? Why when we offered you a cup to drink, you accepted it right away? You didn't first say, no, I don't need it. Now there, you can't say it's because kol mashi yemei olach abalabais asei, because after all, you can still have that still. And Tosfos explains, sitting on the couch is like a gassos thing. It's a thing of pride. So you shouldn't do that unless there's this issue of kol mashi yemei olach abalabais asei. But to take a cup right away, there's no gassos involved. So therefore, you would expect him to first say, that's fine, I don't need it. And then they would ask him again, and then he'd accept it. So, no, but that's the thing. Yeah, but it's a normal thing that you first say, you know what, I don't need, and the person says, yeah, but afal pi kein, yeah. Yeah. So the answer is, omer lahu, misarven lakotan vein misarven lagodol. Because you can refuse a request from a lesser person, but not from a greater person. As we find, for example, with Avraham and Lot, with their respective malachim. The malachim come to Avraham, and he offers them food and to wash their feet and whatever, and they say right away, kein tasa kasha dibarta. But they come to Lot, and they say, Lot, you go to Chayv Nolan, and he has to plead with them. So you see that you're allowed to refuse a request from a lesser person like Lot, but not from a greater person like Avram. So therefore, you being greater people, I wasn't going to refuse. So they ask him, my timer is shtise betrezi in me. Why'd you drink the cup in two swallows? It's only a revius, after all. Amalahu detanya, he says to them, because we learn in a braisa. Hashoise kosib of asachas. If a person drinks a cup of wine all in one gulp, hariz a daugaron, then he's like a glutton. Like he's in such a hurry to drink it. Shnayim derecheret, to drink it in two swallows is a normal way of doing things. Shloisha migasi aruach. If he drinks it in three, then it shows a certain gasas aruach, a certain gaivadik. Like I'm so fastidious, I'm so refined that I'll drink it in tiny little swallows. So that's not right either. But two is just right. Three isn't, but two is just right. Yeah. It also talks about that there may be a difference between wine and other drinks. Okay. What about my time like a hadras afach? Why didn't you turn in another direction? Usually in those times when they would drink, they would usually turn away from everybody else. So he says to them, this is why we're bringing this story, because it says in the Mishnah, the Kala turns her face away. In other words, a man is not normally expected to turn away. So there's a Gemara about this in Bechoras and a Tosfos over there, that the Gemara talks about over there, a person who drinks wine in front of other people, that's not a good midah, not wine, water in front of other people, that's not a good midah. So Tosfos over there mentions, what about our Gemara over here? And there's a couple of answers, one of them being that there's a difference between drinking wine versus water. Water, yeah, you should turn your face away, but wine, where you're, after all, you're drinking wine, you don't usually just drink wine because you're thirsty, you drink wine because you're sitting together in a group, and you're all drinking together, so therefore you don't have to turn your face away. And that's one answer Tosfos gives over there. So water, it's better to, you should turn your face away a little bit, yeah. Okay. But Tosfos gives another answer that it doesn't even mean you have to by water either. What the Gemara is saying over there is even a person who's more tsanua and will turn away when he's drinking water, nevertheless, as the Gemara goes on to say over there, if he needs to go to the bathroom, he should do that right away because holding it in can cause health problems. Okay. The Gemara tells in this connection a similar story. Rabbi Shmuel b'Rab Yosi ikla l'beit Rabbi Shimon b'Rab Yosi ben Lakunya. Rabbi Shmuel b'Rab Yosi visited the house of Rabbi Shimon b'Rab Yosi ben Lakunya. Yahavo le'kosa. They gave him a cup of wine to drink. Kable b'chad zimna. He again accepted it the first time, like Rav Huna b'Reidah Rav Nasan did. B'shasye b'chad zimna. And he drank it in one gulp. Now, why one gulp? We just said you're supposed to do two. Amri lele sovel amar ashoise kose vasachas areza gagron. Don't you agree with the braisa that we said that if you drink it in one gulp, then it's gluttonous? Amalahu. So he says to them, like amri bekose hakotten. That's not talking about when it's a small cup. What you gave me is a cup less than a revius. The yein chamosik, and when the wine is sweet, ukresi rechava, and when you have a large stomach like I do, we find in the Gemara in Bav Metzia that Rabbi Shmuel b'Rab Yosi had a very large stomach. So in those cases, yes, you're allowed to drink it in one gulp when it's smaller than a revius, or where it's very good sweet wine, or when he's a very large person and therefore it's a normal thing for him to eat more at one time. Okay. The Gemara finishes off. Now this last piece that we're going to have over here, these last four lines, you have two major ways that the Rishonim learn it. You have one, you have the Rashi and the Ravid and the Meiri learn it, that it's not talking about the Korban Pesach, it's talking another thing having to do with meals in general. Rabbi Hananel and Tosfos and the Rambam understand that it's talking about the Korban Pesach. So first we'll learn it according to Rashi, and then we'll learn it according to Tosfos and the Rambam. So Amar Rav Huna, Bnei Chavura Nichnasin B'Shloisha, people who join together to have a meal. So you have a bunch of people decided, let's say they want to go out and eat at a restaurant or something. They were going to have a meal together, and they hired a waiter to serve by their meal. So Nichnasin B'Shloisha, to go in, to sit down and start eating, they have to go in at least three. If only one or two of them come in and sit down, the waiter doesn't have to serve them yet. The waiter doesn't have to serve them yet. He's allowed to say, I'll wait until the third member of your group comes, and then I'll start serving you. Because the tirch has to serve one or two people individually. The yotzen afilu be'echad, but then when they want to leave, each person can leave individually. They don't have to wait for each other. Now, it's true, it makes it harder for the waiter to serve the remaining ones, but nevertheless, that's fine. It's only at the beginning of the meal to start serving. There need to be at least three, but afterwards, each one of them can leave individually when they're finished eating. So Rabba says this only applies if they go in at the time when people normally do. In other words, Rashi explains that when they're coming in, they wait to start the meal, they wait. They sit down right away to start the meal. They don't wait until the expected time of that meal is over and make the waiter wait around for them. So we're talking about if they're coming in at the normal time, the expected time for this meal, then we're saying they have to wait for the three of them. And also when they're finishing, we're talking about that the last one who's there is not staying much longer than people normally do. There's a certain amount of time that it normally takes to finish a meal. And if you have one person is staying extra way beyond that, then the waiter doesn't have to wait for him. And only if the waiter knows of what's happening, that they tell him that we're planning to leave one by one. They tell him to begin with that we're planning to leave one by one when we're finished. So then they're allowed to do that. Otherwise, they have to wait around because again, otherwise the waiter is not required to serve the remaining ones because either they're taking too long or because he wasn't informed in advance, and it's a tircha for him to still stick around in order to serve one or two people. So Ravina adds another point. They also have to pay the waiter for the extra time. The last one has to pay extra because he made the waiter stay around longest. But the less hilsa kabase, the halacha is not like him. The last one doesn't have to pay any extra because, again, he's not staying that much longer than usual, and then he's staying a little longer, fine, but that's not such a tircha for the waiter to make him have to pay him extra. Now, that's all according to Rashi. So nothing to do with the Korban Pesach. Stama din, you have a few people are getting together and having a party and hiring a waiter. Tosfos and Rabbeinu Hananel and the Rambam understand that we're talking about the Korban Pesach. So you have, again, we're saying a lot of people are registered for the Korban Pesach. Let's say only some of them came. So now they're allowed to sit down and start eating the Korban Pesach without waiting for the rest of the group. In fact, the Rambam goes further. He says even if those three end up eating the Korban Pesach just between themselves, that's fine. They came at the normal time, because as the Gemara says, they came at the normal time to eat the Korban Pesach. And v'hudud rogash, well, the clock is ticking, that's true. V'hudud rogash v'hudayla means that they told the waiter, go out and knock on the doors of these people and tell them it's time to eat the Korban Pesach and come. So then if they didn't bother coming, then they don't have to wait for them anymore. But if only one or two of them show up, then they do have to wait for the others even in that case. And then, if there's less than three, but then once they finish eating, then they can each leave on their own. They don't have to wait for each other. So since they were there and they left, then each one can stay individually for as long as he wants and finish the Korban Pesach. The point is also the other ones can leave. They don't have to worry that there's going to be noiser. They don't have to worry. We're leaving and there's still half the Korban Pesach on the table. What's going to happen? It's going to become noiser. That's not their problem. They ate however much they planned to begin with. Therefore, at that point, they can leave. And then Ravina says that the ones who ate the Korban Pesach have to pay for what they ate. What we're saying, less hilchos kabbasei, but the halacha is not like him, that they don't have to pay extra for the fact that they ate extra, because again, they sent the waiter around to tell the people to come, and they themselves were at least three, so they're allowed to eat as much as they want, and if they end up eating the whole thing, they don't have to reimburse the other people. Even though, so the other people didn't end up showing up, Or by the time they show up, it's all gone. Doesn't matter. Well, if the other people come and it's before Chatzos and there's still Korban Pesach left, they can eat it. But, well, yeah, for sure. But we're saying even before that, even let's say it's 9 or 10 o'clock at night, there's still plenty of time. But they're sitting over there and they want to eat more because don't they hate? They're allowed to eat more. Either other people registered for the Korban Pesach, but they already sent the waiter to go tell them, you know what, it's time for the Seder, and they didn't show up. So therefore, they're entitled to eat as much as they want. And if they end up eating the whole thing, and then those people show up at 11 o'clock at night and say, hey, where's our Korban Pesach? Tough luck, you were late and we already ate it. Hadron alach ketzad tzolens. If they want to wait, they're allowed to wait, but we're saying they're not required to. And remember, it's not just a family. When you have many people registered for a Korban Pesach, it's not necessarily one big extended family. You can have, let's say, I'll be bringing a Korban Pesach, and I'll be inviting you and all your families and whatever, and you'll register in advance, and you'll say, I'm paying X amount towards the expenses of the Korban Pesach. But there's an expectation that you're going to come on time, and if I send somebody to knock on your door and tell you it's time, that you're not going to say, I'm too tired, I'll come in an hour,
Okay. How long do they have to wait?
That's the thing. Once there's three of them, they don't have to wait. That's what the Gemara is saying over here. Again, according to this explanation that we're talking about the Korban Pesach, once there are three of them, and once it's the expected time for eating the Korban Pesach, they don't have to wait anymore. They can start right then and there.
It's not proper. If there's a whole group of 15 people and three come ahead of the 15 people, let's say 5 minutes,
ahead. That's the thing. I mean, it is ahead. What it is those three came on time. Everybody else is late. So beyond a certain point, they're not required to wait for the rest of those people. That's the point.
Okay. But there shouldn't be yotze if the whole chavura was registered, and if just three out of 15 came, what does that mean?
It means that they're eating the Korban Pesach, and if the other people show up and there's still meat of the Korban Pesach left for them, then good, and if not, then not.
So it's first come, first serve, basically.
Not really first come, because we're saying you have to have three of them, but yeah. If they, again, we're not talking about, we said there's two conditions. It has to be that they came on time, so not that they came early. And it has to be that they sent the waiter or they sent somebody to go tell these people, you know what, it's time for the Seder. And those people said, oh, we'll come later or something.
And if you couldn't reach them, the waiter.
If you couldn't reach them, you go knock on their door and tell them.
Okay. So that's fair.
Yeah. Right. Okay. Okay. Hadron Allah. Okay.